Hello, my name is James. I'm a grateful recovering addict. Welcome everyone to the importance of a solid foundation. We open this meeting with the serenity prayer. God grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, courage to change things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I'm going to begin with the press media announcement. As our 11th tradition says, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. The primary purpose of our public relations effort is to tell the story of Narcotics Anonymous and what our program offers to the still-suffering addict. Members of the press are sometimes attracted to our convention, and we welcome their interest. However, we do not disclose our last names in the media as identifiable members of Narcotics Anonymous. If a member of the press approaches you, please direct them to the chair or vice chair of the convention. Statement to the media. If any members of the media are present, we ask you to contact the chair or vice chair of the convention for information. Now I'll read the social media statement. The widespread use of social media, networking, and social media by our fellowship indicates that these forums are resources that can serve to facilitate greater communication and interaction among Narcotics Anonymous members. With that being said, some of our members may not want to be depicted in photos on social media platforms. Please be mindful of this and get permission from members if you intend to post their photos on any type of social media. Thank you. Can we now please have the clarity statement?
I'm Sherry and I'm an addict.
Hi, Sherry.
At NA meetings, we introduce ourselves as addicts. When members introduce themselves as addicts and alcoholics or talk about living clean or sober, the clarity of the NA message is blurred. To speak in this manner suggests that there are two diseases, that somehow one drug is separate from the rest, requiring special recognition. Our identification as addicts is all-inclusive in reference to the disease of addiction, allowing us to focus on our similarities, not our differences.
Thank you. Thank
you. Please have, who is an addict? No. You can read it there. Speaker Bill.
I'm an addict named Bill.
Hey, Bill.
You know, I got a foundation, and the importance of it wasn't really relevant at the time. It's way, way more important, and I see the relevance of it more so now than I did when it was being developed. When I got clean, I was real quiet, I was real scared. I didn't know how to talk, I didn't know how to interact with people. Venues like this made me like, I was a wallflower at dances. My first sponsor, he took me to meetings. I did 180 meetings in my first 90 days, and he drugged me around. He supported me. We was a little crazy. I mean, we was going to meetings, but he took me to the strip club. That wasn't my thing, but that was his thing, so I went there too, right? That was his thing. I was just, wherever he went, I went. And so, that particular sponsor I wanted him to be my sponsor, but he wasn't working steps. He didn't have a sponsor. He was my friend. I used with him. He was crazier than us all, so that was real important when he told me this is what I do. I used to get high at his house, and he didn't say nothing. And then one day he said, man, I don't do that. Like, and he told me why, and I just packed up my wares and went home. So he started acting, his disease was getting the best of him. And actually he started like hitting on his niece, real inappropriate. And she was like my sister, and I supported her, and I said I need to get a sponsor. So I got another sponsor, and this guy went everywhere. He was like, I'm from Warren, Ohio, and he was like our Warren representative to Narcotics Anonymous everywhere I went. They was like, do you know William? I go there now, they ask me about him. So, I went everywhere with him. We went to campouts. I didn't do camping. There ain't a lot of black people to do camping. But when he went camping, we would go to these campouts, and his tribe became my tribe. They treated him real swell. I'm just standing there watching him. How they just embraced him. They brought out wares. They have food over here, but hey, man, well, I got some of this over here. Have some of this. And they offered it to me. And this continued on and on. I went to conventions, same thing, scared to death. But his friends became my friends. His friends see me over in the corner, lost, wishing somebody would talk to me. And they come up and start a conversation with me. Then I can talk to them about really what's going on with me. Because I didn't know how to approach somebody and have a conversation. His tribe became mine. And so this continued. He got me involved in. It was sort of, I can't remember him asking me that I want to get involved in H&I. He sort of told me that my sponsee brother was over there in H&I, and I should go over there and support him. And after he got done, I took over the meeting. And then later he said, you might want to check out that H&I chair position. He said, you might want to be the secretary of the group. He said, you're getting pretty good money. I'm pretty good with your finances. You might want to check out being our treasurer. And all these places that I went, now it's a real slow process for me to come out of my shell. It took years for me to come out of my shell. But I went to a lot of meetings. I got to know people just through going to meetings. It might be I just know one guy at first, and I talk to him a little bit, and then I meet somebody else, and I meet somebody else, and I meet somebody else. I always wanted to, like, cheers, go where they all know your name. That's what they did. William, everywhere he went, everybody knew his name. You mentioned Warren, they say, hey, how's William? I just seen how he just knew people everywhere. He would speak on workshops and all this, and at the time, in the fellowship, things was happening where you had the inner city meetings, and then a lot of people didn't like the inner city meetings, and they was going to the burbs. So there was this like little racial disparity thing going on. They even had workshops on that type of thing going on. But he was cool wherever we went. Go to inner city meetings, he was cool. We went out to the suburbs, he was cool. And I was just hanging out with him. I did not know that later on, I'd be cool no matter where I went. I don't look at it in the room and see, oh, well, I noticed I'm the only black guy, but I don't feel like I'm the only black guy. Because I've seen guys, white guys that go to a meeting, they're the only white guy. But you notice you're the only one. But you notice that you're not treated any different. Mm-hmm. So I finally got what I wanted. I go places, people know my name. They see me. I'm comfortable in my own skin now. Really what happened, y'all let me get comfortable in my own skin. And I do what they did for me. I see the one that's scared, can't talk, jacked up, and I go and I get their phone number. I call them, have a conversation. A lot of my sponsees tell their sponsees to call me. And they're really scared to call me, I don't know why. But when they do, I know how to carry a conversation now. Y'all taught me how to carry a conversation with another recovering addict. If I don't do nothing else, I'll ask them a bunch of questions, and it'll lead into a conversation. So I like it that I have experiences in sponsorship, because when I first started sponsoring guys, I was scared to death. I was like, I don't want to kill nobody. So I relied on my sponsor a whole lot on what to do, what to say, or do what he did to me for them. And at the time, my sponsor had a few sponsees, and some of them, he talked to them real rough. Real rough. I mean, I was brutal sometimes. And I asked him, I said, well, how come you don't talk to me like that? He said, you're sensitive, man. You don't need that. You really don't need all that. I was so broken that I was real compliant. And I went to all these, I mean, I can't tell you how very, 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 very uncomfortable I was. But I showed up. I just was there. So, as I lived through my recovery, I've had a lot of things happen. A whole lot of things happen. Relationships come and go, and I don't do good in I don't do good in relationships, and I do worse when they end. I'm a basket case. And I really needed to depend upon my friends to help me through. Because a lot of times, I would take it way farther than it needed to be, thinking about walking in front of a bus, just so depressed, so hurt. Man, I'd be jacked up. But I got friends. I mean, one time, I was just feeling it. I was boo-hoo crying about a relationship and couldn't drive. Tears was full of my eyes. And I just go over to my friend's house. I'll be over. Knocked on the door. I fell in his arms, boo-hoo crying. Because there's something about the support that y'all showed me I know I need. I know when I was by myself, I was falling apart. I went to his house, I fell in his arms, I'm boo-hoo crying. I did not feel embarrassed about that. His wife put on some coffee, we talked for a while. I felt better. I was able to continue on. Now I'm going to take you last year, 2 years, going on 2 years now. I had some significant losses in my life. My father was dying. He had pulmonary fibrosis, and he was starting early signs of dementia, and I would go there to help do whatever I could for my dad, right? And with his dementia, I was the fall guy. Anything come up missing, I must have took it. He never accused me of taking money. It was always little trinkets. He come missing his battery charger. He ain't tell me that he think I took it. He told my brother, he tell my sister. So I can sense that he think I did something to him when I'm around him. So when he finds his battery charger, he said, he tells my brother, yeah, he come up here and snuck it back in my trunk. He had this, as he was getting worse, he had this money clip. I was in the bathroom. And I could tell that he had something going on and he just didn't say. So I come out of the bathroom. He was in his room. He said, come here. I go in there. He got this tote with all his little trinkets. And he got a picture of the stuff in his tote up under the bed. And I'm sitting down. He's telling me about this little money clip that's missing out of his thing. I said, well, Dad, when did you notice it was missing? He goes, the last time you was up here. And as we were sitting there talking, he asked me, what do you got against me? Tore me up. I left the house. I didn't say goodbye. I didn't say goodbye to my mother. I never do that. I didn't give him a hug. I just left. And from Twinsburg to my house is about an hour drive. I boo-hoo cried all the way home. I was angry. I was hurt. Now, my sisters, you know, like, oh, well, you know, he got dementia. You got to understand. Man, even understanding, that stuff hurts. But I had people who shared with me about their mother had a tote, had a whole bunch of pictures. She used to accuse my sister of stealing the pictures. So it just sort of made me feel a little bit better. But at the time, man, I was tore up. And every time I'm tore up, y'all help build me back up. Every time. Y'all said y'all would never leave me. I don't have to never be alone. Y'all have showed me I don't have to be alone. So going on two years now, I lost William H. He died December 7th. He was my first sponsor that drug me around everywhere. Now, at this time he passed, taking care of my dad for a year and watching all this stuff, something happened to me. My emotions went, they were gone. I fought hard to be an emotional guy. When they started coming up, when I first got clean, I ain't want them. Then I just got used to, this is who I am. I'm the little crybaby dad. I'm the crybaby buddy. All that. So when they called me and said William H. had passed, I had no emotion. Nothing. I had nothing in me. And then I knew something was wrong with me. February 7th, my father passed. I cried a little bit, but I really didn't get nothing out, right? It was a beautiful thing that we was all there. February 12th, Denny H., a guy that I've been clean with like 28, 30 years together, he passed. I did not want to go to no funeral. I had to go to his, you know, there's a funeral you just have to go to. He was the guy I had to go. When I went there, I had nothing, and everybody that knew me said, dude, you look messed up. You look really messed up. They kept telling me how messed up I looked. I felt messed up, and they kept telling me I was messed up, but that was okay. I had to be there. Come March 12th, my nephew died. He had had a heart transplant. And then he got COVID. He ended up dying. He was 18. He was a senior in high school. Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm at his funeral. Another one I have to go to. And all the kids and all the, you know, his mom tore up. And I'm feeling it a little bit. Just a little bit. And then Easter that year, my friend Will J, he passed. I had talked to him a few days before he passed. And he said, oh, brother, he had been sick. And I said, dude, give me your daughter's number and give your daughter my number, because you was missing for a week or two, and I ain't heard from you, and I don't want nothing to be going on with you, and I don't know. He used to come to my house. We go fishing. He stayed. My girl cooking food. I give him a car. He's my fishing buddy. And I sponsored him for a number of years. One of the sponsors, I ain't really have no, for as long as I sponsored, we didn't have no beef. You know how you have beef where they start getting rebellious and all that hard sponsorship? We didn't have that. And he passed. I was through. Y'all supported me and built me up until I started getting better. I started having to pray more. I had to start journaling. And in that journaling, I come to find out a whole lot of stuff that I had ignored. Like times I got stuck after 3 days of day and night. Now, understand, when I'm up there with my parents for them 3 days, the house is hot. I mean hot. It's so hot, my girl even had to leave the house. And she loves the heat. The noise. There's two TVs. They're blasting. Because they both deaf. One here, one there. And I was telling my friend, he said, you know they use loud noise for torture. That's how I felt. I left there tore up. And a lot of times my sister doing her thing, when it's somebody else's shift, she would get one of her sons or somebody else to sort of come relieve me, and it was always an issue with me when it was time for me to leave. And I had a lot of issues. I had a lot of things going on, and I still feel a whole lot of that. Father's Day is coming around again, right? I feel it. I was blessed to have him. He died when he was 91. But I can't tell you. When they passed, I need to say this. When they passed, my mother got COVID 3 times. So she wasn't even in the house. Everybody in the house had COVID but me, my dad, and my brother. I don't know, it must be a gene thing, right? The males. My mother got COVID 3 times. She was in the hospital. She had what they call post-COVID syndrome delirium. I watched my mother. She was out of her mind. Out of her mind. She is pulling that thing tied up. I walked in the room. She looks like a zombie. She don't even see me. I sat there for a half hour. And the nurse come in and shook her hard. And she woke up. She said, you know who that is? And she looked. She smiled. She held a smile for her 10 minutes, and then look forward for 10 minutes, and then she relaxed. And I was like, my God, what's going on here? Before I left, I just walked. I said, Mom, do you know who I am? And she said, Bill. Yeah. Yeah. Y'all lifted me up through all of that. Y'all made it possible. I didn't have to use. I didn't think about using. I hurt. But y'all was there. When it was time to clean out their apartment, my sponsees came with trucks, cars, extra guys. I'm out of my mind. I don't know what to do. I think, do I think I need to call a U-Haul truck? or do I need to get somebody else? And I said, I asked my wife, I said, am I overthinking this? He said, yeah, just relax. They did everything for it. I never knew by being, which y'all taught me to be, would become that important that they would do something for me like that. That's the importance of a solid foundation. Steps, sponsorship, God, treating each other with love and respect, trying to guide and sponsor guys with experience, strength, and hope, and be their biggest cheerleader, no matter what they're going through, to love on kids, to love on everybody, the most I can be. Because that's what y'all taught me, and that's what I think I was always missing in my life. I mean, my mom and loved me, but the people that I chose to hang around with when I was using, wasn't no love going around. Right? We would, if I could pinch your bag, I would. I know you was doing the same thing. We was just scandalous. And when I came here, y'all showed me the kind of care, love, and concern that I always wanted, but never knew how to achieve. So, what y'all gave me, I tried to pass it on. I tried to drag sponsees everywhere. They're more resistant. They're really more resistant now. You might have a couple that be like, come along. And here lately, in the whole thing, there's been a few new people that's excited. And it excites me. They're excited about being of service. They're excited about, because I know what it did for me. When I was quiet and didn't know how to talk, being secretary or making the coffee, people come and talk to you. You know, being secretary, you get to talk to people. You have a purpose. You don't have to think about what you need to talk about. You just do your job, right? So, they have ignited my fire. And they've ignited the fires around my support group too, which I'm so happy for. I am so happy. I got back into H&I. I've been in H&I forever. I had all my sponsees in H&I, so naturally I was sort of, I take a law away from H&I for a minute. So I took a commitment to get back into this, to start helping out. My sponsees, the H&I chair. And I went yesterday, I asked a couple ladies, young ladies, to come and share, and I went back into this facility. I was the chair when this facility opened up and we started the meeting there. And I watched it evolve from people just sitting around like in lounge chairs, talking to girls, mingling with the guys, nobody paying attention, to now it's guys over here, big space, girls over here, two counselors in the middle making sure that nothing happened, right? And I took these, we had a panel. And in the meeting, they was excited. One guy got up. During the meeting, he's like, hold on, I got it. He was giving his dudes all high fives. I was like, okay, like, I'm chairing the meeting, right? And then this girl, they was all excited. And this girl started doing something like, I said, excuse me, we're having a meeting. I think I was a little gruff, but this is a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. She apologized later, and it ended up being a beautiful meeting, and I said, I love this. That's what I love. Watching and hearing the comments and listening to the people sharing the panel and listening to the comments of the guys in treatment and the girls in treatment and the interaction with them after the meeting, that lit my fire. It's exciting again. It always has been, but I forgot how exciting that type of stuff is, and how it's so much it helped me. Like, it's nothing like doing a meeting, don't see nobody for years, and you go somewhere and they say, I remember you. You used to bring no meetings in at the Neil Cap. I've been going to meetings up here and I've been clean ever since. I don't know who they are. I can't remember. It's just one of many faces. But the importance of a solid foundation. I'm a guy, I work steps. Some people, if you don't like working steps, you ain't hanging around with me too much, because that's all I talk about. And a lot of people are opposed to that. They really are. And I think a lot of people go, oh, here we go again. That's what I was taught. That's what my sponsor shoved. He didn't shove down my throat. He told me, you read this, and you read this this many days, and you start writing on it. And I didn't procrastinate, so we ain't had no issues. The time that I did procrastinate, we had issues. He had issues with me. So, I love this program. The steps, traditions, service, God, fellowship, the love of y'all, all of that makes me a better workmate. The guys I work with, they like me. We get along real well. They know some of the people I know and never met them. They know Bonnie's pie, I mean Bonnie's pumpkin rolls, and they know Bonnie's blueberry things, and they know they know Kay's crack muffins. There's some pecan muffins. You eat one, you can't stop. My friends named them crack muffins. Crack pecan. And I've never been to his house. I did go to his son's graduation, but he don't even know I'm in recovery. That is what this stuff has done for me in my life. I can't tell you how grateful I am. I try to show you all how grateful I am. But I could never, I used to not like going to gratitude meetings. Oh, I'm so thankful, and I just love the blah blah blah. And then everybody acts a fool and treats each other bad, right? You show gratitude. Ask people to share. No, I can't share. I don't want. I was taught never say no. Never say no unless I got a prior commitment. And sometimes I'll cancel my prior commitment. But I think because of what I do, I don't get a whole lot of no's where I see my sponsor and other people get a whole lot of no's or shucking and jiving from someone. And I just, when they see me, I guess they be like, okay, he don't never say no, I can't say no. But the girl I asked to share, she said, oh yeah, Brad called me and I was stonewalling him. But here you go now for the same meeting that he was trying to get. She said, yeah. And I drug her sponsee in on it too, so I had I covered two dates, right? I don't know. Y'all have done so much for me, you will never know. You will never know. And I can't never repay you guys in Narcotics Anonymous for what you've done for my life. I'm eternally grateful, and my family is too. That's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you, Bill. Our next speaker is Mitch.
No, I'm gonna stand up. I gotta follow that shit. I'm Mitch and I'm an addict. No, my phone's bigger than that. This is about the importance of a solid foundation. You know, I wished I could have recorded what the guy Gary T said in the men's rap, because he summed it up very well about the importance of a foundation. And he talked about the 90 and 90 and how important that was to him becoming a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And he said, if you do 90, he said, they told him when you got here, if you'll do 90 and 90, and I'm not telling his story, but this is my story too. If you do 90 and 90, your whole life will turn around 180 degrees. And I heard that shit because I was around for a long time before I actually made the decision to get clean. I was just trying to get people off my ass. When I made the decision to get clean, and they said do 180 or 90 and 90, and I was disabled, I was sick, I couldn't work anymore, I had to quit working a few months earlier, and like I did 150, 160 in 90 days. I couldn't go every day, twice a day, because I had a family and responsibilities. But man, I was going every day, at least one meeting, and normally two, sometimes three. I got clean in Nashville, and it's a city like Pittsburgh. There was a meeting somewhere all the time. And so that's what I did. And it was no joke, man. By the time I was done with my 90 days, my life was 180 degrees turned around. And I'm not telling you all my problems were resolved, because that's not the fucking case. But I am telling you my life was changed. I had a sponsor. My first sponsor was a pretty good guy. He was smart, because I kept bugging him. When I made the decision, the day I didn't shoot myself and I made the decision to actually do this, I got a sponsor. I start going to meetings all the time, and I hear you guys talking about writing steps. I want to real bad, right up until he tells me to do it. I'm aggravating the piss out of him until he gets started. But he didn't tell me to get started on the steps. He said, what I want you to do first is I want you to get in practice to write. He said, so every day for 10 minutes, I want you to write in a journal. Just write. And I said, I don't know. The first day I sat down and I didn't know what to write, you know, what we do. He said, I don't give a shit what you do, what you write. He said, I want you to put pencil to paper for 10 minutes. I don't care if you don't write anything, but I don't know what to write. Over and over and over for 10 minutes, I want 10 minutes. I got all day. 10 minutes is pretty easy. And the first day was 10 minutes, and the next day was 10 minutes, and the next day was about 3.5 hours, and a lot of tears, and the next 2.5, 3 months was just insane. I would write for hours and hours at a time, and I fill up this big 5-section notebook, and you know, I got all this interesting stuff, and I call my sponsor and go, I think I'm done. I got a notebook full. You want to go over this? He goes, nope, you can burn that shit. Nobody needs to know that. You just needed that out of your head. And I'm like, damn. He said, now we're going to start on steps. And I started doing the first step. You know what? I didn't burn that book. And I found that book a few years later. And he was not wrong. Boy, the crazy in that shit, nobody needed to know. But, you know, I got a foundation. He got me involved in H&I with 3 months clean. The first time I shared at an H&I meeting, I think I just got 6 months, because that's what it takes to be able to be a part of a panel at an H&I meeting. And he said, I need you to go to this H&I meeting with me. He didn't tell me I was on the panel until I sat down, and he goes, oh no, you're sitting over there with those two guys. And I'm like, oh no, what is this? He goes, you're going to be on the panel. And I wore glasses at the time, and I couldn't see anybody because they fogged up so bad by the time it was my turn to share, I couldn't tell there was anybody in the room, and I liked it that way. But, you know, there's a few simple things that I had to do. And they still apply. As long as I do those things, I don't have to get high today. If I go to meetings, talk to my sponsor, I got a God of my understanding, and I try to pray and meditate as best I can, and I'm involved in service on some level, and just being a member of Narcotics Anonymous is a service commitment. If you think showing up and not hanging out and not doing anything and not talking to newcomers, you ain't doing your fucking commitment right, because it's a commitment. If you're a member, one of the things we do is welcome newcomers. I was taught that early on. I was welcomed, and like Bill, I was dragged around. I had 5 teenagers in my house when I got clean. I had to get fucking clean or I was going to prison. My sponsor would drag me off to places and he'd say, call the kids, get all the kids together. Saturday afternoon, we're going to go to the minor league baseball game. You know, he would pay for all of this because he knew I'd lost my job and I wasn't working. And he said, you know, I used to ask him, I go, Jimmy, you can't pay for me and my whole family to do all this shit. This is too much. He said, it'll be your turn soon enough. He was not wrong. Over the years, I have done, oh my God, I can't even imagine how much I've done, you know, for other people. It ain't even a second thought to buy dinner or to pay for, you know, somebody to go with us somewhere. We go places. And it's funny because Silvio caught me and Bill and Bonnie in the same place. It was like shooting fish in a barrel. He had 3 of us. And besides my wife, Bill is my best friend. So it's really funny that we both shared on the same thing, the same workshop. But we drag people everywhere we go. I mean, we go out of town a lot. We like to go to Akron. We like to run around. And we try to get a carload. It's really funny that I was thinking about, Gary was talking about 90 and 90. It has been so long since that was feasible around where I'm from, I forgot about that. I don't even tell my sponsees anymore 90 and 90. Because they're all too busy. They got a life. They got social fucking media. And, you know, they got a woman. They got a, you know. And it's like, I can't go there. I got kids. Or my wife will be mad at me. You know, when I was clean about 6 months, my wife asked me, how much longer you... He said, how much longer you got to go to them meetings? And I said, long as I want to stay clean. And she said, well, I don't like it. She said, that's as bad as when you were using. You were home more when you were using. And I said, well, you know, I don't know what to tell you. I have to do this if I want to live to be old. And if you can't live with it, I'm going to fucking miss you. She stayed for another 8 years. We were talking on the way up here. I had to make a choice. Her or them? There wasn't a choice. Y'all saved my life. And within the first 90 days after that, I knew. This made so much difference in my life, and it was so new, and it was so special, and I already felt so touched by it that my marriage could have been over at that minute, and I wouldn't have been happy. Because, you know, we're not really all that well when we get here, especially about relationships. Matter of fact, I heard somebody else talking about relationships and 30-something years clean, and he's still fucking struggling. What a surprise. That's the one thing that we all struggle with. I know my foundation gave me the ability. And I'm just telling you, you can't do enough NA in the beginning. If you really want this shit to change your life, you got to give it your life. I mean, if you're going to be half-ass, you're going to get half-ass. And if you're going to hang out with people that's going to the dope house, or, you know, their friends are going to the dope house, guess where y'all are headed? It's that simple. I mean, it's not rocket science, but boy, fucking logic don't come easy when I'm not looking for it. You people helped me with that. Even to this day. It's funny because one of my sponsees came up with us, and this morning he was calling me and Bill Grumpy 1 and Grumpy 2. And I was thinking, I'm not grumpy, but I went into Circle K to get some, we got a pastries and for coffee. And she says, I'm closed. The cat register I went to, she goes, I'm closed. Go to the next register. So I go over there and I'm standing behind a guy that's struggling. It's one of them fast check things that's supposed to be the speedy smart check. That stupid son of a bitch is frozen. So I'm standing behind him. One of the clerks come over and she starts working with him. And she's taking everything off and putting it back. And she's starting to get frustrated. And I said, well, that smart sign on the top of that is about the stupidest thing I've ever seen. And Matt started giggling and said something about cranky. And I said, I am not cranky. And then the lady that shooed me off from the other register come over there. She goes, well, I'll do this, because they got that guy out of the way after a little bit. She says, I'll take care of this. And I said, well, okay. She puts them on there and she goes, well, this thing's frozen. It ain't going to work. You're going to have to go over to that register. I said, I've been trying to do that all morning. And he goes, I thought you weren't cranky. I like people in my life that hold me accountable. When I act a damn fool, I need people to tell me you're acting a damn fool. Because a lot of the time, man, I don't realize it. You know, I heard somebody sharing about denial. My denial is that I'm right most of the time. And hey, I'm not shitting you. I believe that right up until I look at somebody laughing or you know, it's like, it's funny in here. But when I'm alone arguing with my wife, I'm fucking high 90s almost all the time. I'm wrong sometimes, but this ain't one of them. You know, I need people who love me enough to tell me the truth even when it's going to hurt, especially when it's going to hurt my feelings. That's how you know when you have real friends, when your friends love you enough to tell you the truth knowing you're going to be pissed. And that's one of the things I learned to do here, because I'm telling you, when we were dope friends, I would tell you anything you wanted to hear as long as you'd share. And didn't ask me if I had anything. Because I wasn't big on sharing unless we were sharing yours. I think that's how most of us were. You know, you people have made such a difference in my life. I worked the steps, and I've been through the steps a few times. I remember I started going through the steps. I was asked to go through the steps with a group of guys. There was five of us. And we looked through this book that we were going to work out of. And we all sat down to actually make an agreement that we would work these steps out of this book. And the five of us were committed to this. And so I'm looking through this book and I start reading these questions. And they're really deep. And I tell them, I'm willing to do this, but you have to know, by the time we get to the end of this book, if I really start looking at this shit for real, and this is like after having been through the steps, by the time we get to this end of this book, I can't stay married if I look at these questions honestly and answer them honestly. I am not going to be okay with where I am in my living conditions. I'm willing to do this workbook, but you have to know y'all are going to hold my pitiful ass hand through a divorce before it's over. That was not true. It was about 6 months later. But as soon as the book was over, I knew that I wasn't happy and I couldn't live this way anymore and I couldn't do this anymore. But you people taught me, you know, y'all taught me everything I know about being a man, about being a dad, about being a husband. One of the things I learned about being a husband is, if you want a good woman, you got to be a good man. If you're going to be a douchebag, you can't bitch about anything she does. So, I try not to be a douchebag. And my wife usually loves me. Well, no, let me rephrase. She always loves me. She usually likes me. That's not always, but most of the time. But, you know, y'all taught me everything I knew about this shit. You know, you did teach me. You held me accountable. I didn't get another girlfriend before I told my wife I wanted a divorce. I didn't have one waiting in the wings. I didn't have a backup plan or a B. I was married to that one. That one was the only one, and she got to leave. I did it like a man. That's how a man's supposed to do. I didn't do it in anger. I didn't tell her I wanted a divorce when I was screaming and ranting and raving. I went in and I said, I am terribly unhappy. I have been unhappy for a very long time, and I don't want to be married anymore, or at least not to you. That's grown-up shit. I wasn't a grown-up when I got here. I mean, I was 30 years old, but I wasn't a damn grown-up by far shot. I don't know how to. I still struggle with. I don't have a bunch of people dying. Luckily, we don't do that at the same time, because I've really been a whole lot involved in his. But I've got kids. My kids are all off the rails. Their mother had mental health issues. My children all have mental health issues. Of the three, there's two that I really can't even have a conversation with right now because, you know, they just go off the rails and I won't be treated that way. It's not that I don't love them, but we're just not going to have a conversation where you think it's okay to abuse me. You know, that's another grown-up thing. I didn't know how to stand up to you without knocking your ass out. And y'all taught me that, you know, it's not about being passive-aggressive. It's not about backing in the corner until you have to fight your way out. It's about standing your ground right here and now and being assertive. And that was a word I didn't even understand until y'all started. I'm like, what the hell is assertive? Assertive means I say no when I mean no. I don't say it mad. I don't have to be angry. I just have to say no and stay with that. You can't talk me out of that if that's what I want. Y'all taught me so much, and it all came because of the foundation I got here. You know, I started listening to you guys more even than I would listen to myself a lot of the time. I mean, I can remember even when I was first clean. After I was clean a few months, I moved to Youngstown, Ohio from Tennessee, and Youngstown is where I'd done all my nasty. I mean, the really nasty, dirty shit you do. And I'm thinking, I'm going to go back there, and this is going to go to hell in a handbasket. And so I start going to meetings, and I start meeting people, and I start telling them how wrong they're doing the meetings, but I'll help them fix it, and, you know, all kind of shit. And they were okay with that. They just put up with me. So, you know, I know that being here and being around you people has taught me how to do a lot of things that I never knew how to do and things I still wouldn't know how to do. I learned how to be a husband by not so much by listening to what a lot of guys did, but listening to what a lot of guys didn't do. You know, because how many of us do you hear in the meetings, especially if you're in a meeting where there's no women, and the guys are all belly aching about, you know, this is wrong and it can't be. And you know what? I ain't never fucking innocent. I ain't never innocent. I can pretend to be. I can absolutely not be at fault to start with. I didn't start this, but I am not fucking innocent because once I fucking get started, once you get started, I'm going to join in. I have proven that recently. I didn't start this, and I didn't handle this well, and I'm at fault, but I'm not all at fault. I can't begin to tell you. I have friends. We talk about being friends. When I first got here, I wanted to be. I saw these two guys talking about going fishing after the meeting, and one of them was going over to the other one's house, and I'm like, you motherfuckers ain't never coming to my house. Y'all are dope fiends. You better not ever let me in your house. But I really, really wanted that. I felt the need, that connection that, you know, there's friends. And I was like, man, I sure would like to have friends, but I don't know that I want these people in my house. And, you know, something I learned in here, another one of the things y'all taught me, I met Bill when I'd first moved up here. I met Daryl not long after I first moved up here. And that was a damn long time ago, it seems like. I was a young man. I still had full head of hair. So did Daryl and Bill. I met them back then. And Bill and I have been best friends for a long time. And I have 25-year friendships. But the real fucking thing is I didn't get it, is if you want to have a 25-year friendship, you got to be a friend for 25 years. Even when it's messy and it's uncomfortable and they're crying or you're crying or somebody's mad or somebody's got to tell somebody the truth, it gets sticky sometimes. And you just know that, you know, it's going to be okay. That's how long-term friendships come to be. I didn't know none of that shit, man. I'd steal your shit and we wouldn't talk no more. Or you'd steal my shit and I'd be hunting for you. I don't know. I know this. The Foundation of Narcotics Anonymous has given me a life that I cannot even begin to tell you how grateful I am for. You know, Bill talked about grateful. Grateful isn't a word. It's an attitude and a fucking action. You know what? I hate doing this shit. I hate sharing at meetings. I fucking really hate sharing in front of rooms full of people. But I never say no unless I have a legitimate reason. Like I got a broke fucking leg and I can't stand there, or I'm in the hospital. And I got braces so I can stand most of the time. But I mean, I don't say no. If you ask me for an H&I commitment, I won't commit to a meeting every week because I can't do that. I don't do most of the service commitments I did in the beginning because I just ain't capable of that. But I still do service. I mean, I'm still an active member of my home group. I'm still an active member of Narcotics Anonymous. And you people taught me all of that. I don't know where I'd be without you, but it wouldn't be a good place. And I just keep, as long as all I got to do is do something uncomfortable, like stand up here for a half hour at a time every now and then, I'll keep coming back. That's all I got. Thanks.
If anyone would like to comment on Metro Bills,
Daryl, I'm an addict. I'm glad you two guys stuck around with me. We've been to a handful of meetings together, and I'm still glad to see you in these rooms. And thanks, Sylvia, for asking to share.
Thanks, Daryl.
Hi, family. My name's Sylvia. I'm grateful for coming out.
Sylvia.
Yeah, I was glad to have you two share together, you know, because that was my first thought when I accepted this position. And, you know, I got to tell you, I really miss the sponsorship meetings from years ago. And I'm glad we've remained friends and helped each other through our things, and you know, I just respect and value and love both of you. Thank you.
Thanks, Sylvia. Thanks. My name's Matt Manatta.
Hey, Matt.
Bill, you mean the world to me, man. red flag on that Facebook that day, and got me the treatment, and it saved my life, man. I thank you from the bottom of my heart. And I've always loved you from when I got clean the last time. You guys have been the most important people in this thing, man. And you supported me from day one. You and Ms. Bo are great people. I'm glad to call you my friend. I'm glad to call Miss my sponsor. You guys call me on my bullshit, tell me I'm stupid, and I like it. But I need that. And I love you guys. Thanks for dragging me out here.
I'm an addict. My name's Roberta. I want to thank both of you for sharing. This was a great meeting, and I really I'm thankful for the foundation too that I was blessed with putting together through predecessors and people that showed me not so much talked it, but they showed me. How to live the program, and I didn't even know it. Like I'm like the one guy said, I had no idea what was going on here. It took me about 7 years of coming in, but there was an attraction here, and the folks that attracted me were the ones that were making the coffee, that were at the door, that picked up the cups and ashtrays, and then when I finally felt that surrender in the jail cell, I was ready to commit suicide. I couldn't take it anymore. And I got hit with the light. I mean, I got hit. And I knew this was the only place for me to go. And those people were here for me. They were here for me, and they showed me how to do this step by step. I mean, unbelievable. Not by what they talked, by what they were showing me how to live this and reaching out. You know, it's funny that when that pandemic hit, and it started messing with all our meetings, and everybody all of a sudden got separated in that. It's funny, the diehards knew exactly what to do. We knew exactly what to do and how to stay connected. I went straight through that thing and never lost a beat. And I stayed connected with folks because they showed me what to do. They showed me how to hold on and stick together, and we never stopped having meetings. And we worked out ways to have them. And I had them at my house, a couple of us, and we sat, and we put the masks on and brought the books, and we just did it right through that thing. And it's funny, like the people, the foundation, it got a little shaky afterwards because the meetings, like a lot of them folded, but a lot of them are back strong. And the folks that are serious are strong here. And I'm thankful for the folks that stayed through that. I'm so grateful to be a part of this program. Thank you both for sharing.
Thank you.
Miller, I'm an addict.
Hi.
The foundation that I was blessed enough to receive was like Roberta said. I was attracted to the people who were doing the service. I was attracted to the people who were walking what they were talking about. And, you know, no matter what I've been through in recovery, and it's been a lot, deaths, illnesses, you know, there's always been those people there to remind me to work my foundation, to use my foundation and use what I've been taught in these rooms to get another 24 hours clean and stay sane for another 24 hours. Mm-hmm. And I feel really, really blessed. Some are still here, some aren't. I feel really, really blessed for each and every predecessor that placed my life to help me still be here today. Guys, thanks so much for sharing.
Thank you.
And
helping
me
too. I'm an
addict,
Jim. Grumpy one and Grumpy two. Yeah, okay. Hey, I want to thank both of you for sharing today. I think when I met you two, I think I still had hair. Maybe. But no, I do appreciate everything. You guys been like a solid rock, you know, in my recovery, and I thank you for that. And, you know, for someone that didn't want people at your house, how come every time I go to your house, you got 50 people up there? That's a lot of
pitch. Thanks, Jim.
I'm Sherry and I'm an addict.
Hey, Sherry.
Hey, Sherry.
And I'd like to thank both of the speakers. I like what each one said, but when he said he had 5 children and 2 of them were still treating him like crap, thinking, my son wasn't born during my addiction, he's almost 27. And he talks to me like he's the dad. And I'm getting the insanity. It's insane. I'm just glad that a congo member invited me to come to hear you all. I know Bill, but I don't know you now. And I have taught of this in you, so. But I want to say it might not come out like that. But I'm just like real grateful. This is like big, grown people stuff. Like you said, I'm about 63 and I'm like trying to catch it. And I gotta say something about Silvio. He's always in the middle. Always in the middle. And when I saw him, I started crying. Because I need to stay in the middle. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Sherry. I'm James. I'm a group for recovering addict.
Hi, James.
My condolences to all that you've lost. I've shared about this, and I believe that I'm building a foundation in my recovery to help me deal with things like losses, because my dog's getting old, my grandma's getting older, I'm very close to my grandma. And I've noticed some things happening with her memory and everything. And I don't want to diagnose her. I'm not a doctor or anything. But I do worry about that kind of thing. And that encourages me to see how you've gone through it and how you can handle yourself now. I appreciate your share as well, Mitch. You guys, I just want to thank you a lot. It's powerful stuff. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, can we have We Do Recover?
I'm an addict. My name's Roberta.
We
do recover. When at the end of the road we find we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative. Either go on as best we can to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Thank you.
Thanks, Roberta.
Okay, can we close the meeting with the third step prayer?
Hey, everybody, before we close the meeting, I don't normally like interject like this, but I want to give James a hand.
Thank you.
Okay. I just also wanted to let everybody know he just celebrated 2 years, Jesus. Bill. Keep coming back, everything in there.